Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film. Welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I'm joined by our reviews editor, the lovely Matthew Leyland.
Oh, what an introduction. Hello.
Lovely. You're lovely. Oh. This week we are rolling with the punches in Creed 3. We're tracking a childhood friendship with Close and checking out a BAFTA documentary nominee, Electric Malady. But before we get onto those, what have you been watching this week? What have you been watching this morning?
Matthew. This very morning, yes, the premiere of season 3 of The Mandalorian, the very first episode.
So
he's back at last.
What have you discovered in episode 1, without spoilers, taken it?
It's a relatively short episode, so the episodes vary in length quite a bit. This one's only 37 minutes, which is one of the shorter ones, but it did cover quite an enormous amount of ground. I was quite surprised. There's quite a few familiar faces and voices, I should say. Obviously, at the core of it, again, is Pedro Pascal as Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, and his ward, Grogu, a.k.a. Baby Yoda, a.k.a. the child. So they're continuing their adventure. I don't want to delve too much into spoilers, but it's quite a solid start. Kind of gives you a very good idea of what his quest is going to be this series, what his goal is, following on from events in Mandalorian Season 2 and his episode in the Book of Boba Fett, which we saw last year. So he's looking for redemption. So he starts off on his quest and he encounters, as I said, some very familiar faces and voices in some instances as he begins this quest. And that's going to shape this whole season.
Yeah, he's going to Mandalore
this
time. Does he get there in episode 1 or is that something we've got to look forward to?
That's something we've got to look forward to. But yeah, he does visit some other familiar locations and some new locations. And there is quite a lot of Mandalore lore going on in this one, like right from the start. It's got a very kind of slightly tricksy pre-title sequence, which you think is going to be one thing, but turns into a different thing, which set it up nicely. There's quite a lot of action as well. I was surprised because not all season openers don't always have a lot of action. Sometimes they kind of gather the pace quite slowly, but this one has had gunfights, space battles, sea beasts, asteroids. Packed an awful lot in for 37 minutes. It's
all the shenanigans. And I mean, the most important thing is the child. As cute as ever, and harnessing his powers better than in previous seasons.
He levitates a jelly bean in this one, I'll say that, which, I mean, I don't know about you, but if I could command the force, that's what I'd be doing straight away. I'd be
just lifting them
jelly
straight
beans
into your mouth without using your fingers.
He's absolutely as adorable as ever. He kind of gets a pet in this one, or he attempts to get a pet. I won't say too much, but that's a particularly cute moment. And just his range of expressions is just all, it's always just the gift that keeps on giving. I'm sure the directors, when in doubt, they just say, well, let's just cut to Grogu doing his face, and that'll tide us over to the next scene.
Yeah. And any helmet off action from old Pedro this episode?
No. So, I mean, if you want to see Pedro's face, I mean, just watch The Last of Us. But there wasn't any in this one.
Do we think there will be, though, going forward? Do you think we're going to see a bit more under the helmet?
Yeah, hopefully. Although, this is the whole kind of thing shaping his arc, is that he did remove his helmet and thereby turned himself into an exile.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to do that if you're a Mandalorian. So whether he will risk that again is hard to say. But I expect we will, because he's a much bigger star now as well. So we want to see
that face. We do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, as a massive Star Wars fan, has it satisfied everything that you wanted to get out of it? And has it got you tingling with excitement for next week?
Yeah, pretty much, I didn't think it was as good as the first episode of the second season, but I did think it was a good, solid opener. And yes, of course, I'll be back next week. As soon as it debuts on Disney Plus, I'll be there.
Getting up in your pajamas to watch it as soon as it's on the system. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Mandalorian is now on season 3, and it is every single Wednesday morning hitting Disney Plus. Amazing. Okay. I'm sure we will talk about that a lot more, but shall we get on to what else we can watch this week on the big screen? Yeah. It's time to get into the ring with this one.
Damian's fighting the world. He's trying to hurt people. I vouch for you. You think you mad? Try spending half your life in a cell.
Why does somebody else live your life? I'm coming for everything.
You threatening me?
Something is going on with you.
Damien was like family.
Now we pass talking.
Then maybe you just have to find out.
Do what I gotta do. Some of my methods, you might disagree with me. These are family ties. I recognize mine. I know that they needed me. It's traumatic stress. Watch it manifest. Got my only fear. I ain't scared of death. Did you hear me yet? I ain't scared of death. Did you hear me yet?
So this is Creed 3. For those of us who haven't seen Creed 1 or 2, quick summation, Matthew, and tell us where we find Donnie in this film.
Yeah, so Adonis Creed, he's the son of former heavyweight champion Apollo Creed, famously Rocky's opponent, then best friend, who met a tragic end across the span of the Rocky series. And so the series was revived very successfully by Ryan Coogler with the first Creed, in which Adonis tracks down Rocky, who's still living in Philadelphia, and then Rocky becomes his trainer, and he sets on the road to imitate his father's progress in the ring. And then in Creed 2, he did become the world champion. And now in Creed 3, we see that he's retiring. He's kind of achieved everything he wants to. He's kind of moving on in years. He's got a very happy family life with his wife and his daughter. He's got a palatial mansion in LA, which is just extraordinary. I couldn't stop staring at that.
I know, Grecian pillars and like drapes everywhere. Yeah. And just, yeah, very glamorous. Yeah.
Yeah. And a huge portrait of Donnie.
Of himself. In the games, yeah. Really. Why wouldn't you?
Well, exactly. If you've got the money, why not? Yeah. So everything's absolutely perfect. So, of course, then a ghost from his past appears in the form of his childhood friend, Damien Dame Anderson, played by Jonathan Majors, who's been in prison for the last, I think it's 18 years. And he wants to catch up with Donnie, and it all seems very friendly at first. But then, of course, conflict starts to arise. And no spoilers, they end up in the ring together. So, yeah. I mean, there's never any great spoilers, really, with a Rocky / Creed movie. You know where it's heading straight
away. There will be punches. That's going to
happen. Yes, exactly. Yeah, you'd be disappointed if there weren't.
Okay, so this is also Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut.
It is,
so
yeah.
He's literally done a Sylvester Stallone and directed one of the installments himself. How's he done with this? Does it impress you?
Yeah, it's incredibly assured. You kind of watch it, you'd be surprised if you didn't know otherwise that this was a debut, I think, because, you know, he's gone straight. He hasn't started off with like a small scale, small budget indie. He's gone straight in with a huge franchise movie with this huge backstory to contend with. He's looking after this great legacy. And yeah, I thought he did. He does a really impressive job. He kind of marshals all the story beats. I mean, it's just shy of 2 hours, but I thought it went past really, really quickly. So he's got a really good handle on the pace. And obviously he directs himself as well. And he gives, you know, a pretty rigorous performance. Obviously, there's a lot of emotion going on in this one. He has to go through quite a big emotional arc. And then there's the whole kind of physical side of it as well. I mean, he really kind of takes some heavy punches. You really see, he really puts himself through the ringer as he does in the other Creed movies. He kind of commands the other cast terrifically as well, gives them plenty to do. I mean, Jonathan Majors, we have to say, is the absolute standout
my God.
Here.
Yeah, I mean, Majors is astonishing in this.
He really is, yeah.
He is so feral and dangerous and vulnerable and hurt. Yeah. He does an incredible job with Diamond Dame, as he's known, of being incredibly twitchy and just broken, fiercely competitive and wanting to just go through all of what Adonis has and basically punch not only him, but his lifestyle, his standing, his fame, everything to the ground. The absolutely astonishing thing that Majors can do is he can do all that, which is horrible. He is the adversary, but make you care for him when things don't go his way. And that is such a tricky thing to pull off, isn't it? To play a baddie and give it such humanity.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'd say he's the best antagonist since Apollo Creed himself, Carl Weathers, in the original Rockies. We do have some great baddies like Mr. T and Dolph Lundgren, but they are a bit more cartoony and you really boo-hiss them. They're not kind of sympathetic. I mean, Drago kind of gets more sympathetic in the second Creed film, but not in the kind of the way that they paint Jonathan Majors' character here. He is much more layered. And you kind of wonder what he's doing, you know, when he's not on the camera. You're thinking, what's he up to now?
Where is he? What nefarious thoughts is he having somewhere? You talked about the physical performance. Both of these guys are in peak physical condition. You see them in their progress. They both get a little montage, which we all like. And then you're going to see them actually meet in the ring. And it is like seeing two gladiators get in there, isn't it?
Really is.
Two tigers in a cage. And it's thrilling. It's actually thrilling.
Yeah, it does that really successful job that, I mean, all the best of the series does. It really kind of build up the tension so that you are absolutely foaming at the mouth for them to get in the ring and kind of sort this out with fisticuffs. Even though there is kind of a message going through the film about how violence isn't always the best solution. Or, you know, we should explore other means, which is in relation to Creed's own daughter. But of course, this does end up with things being sorted out via violence.
One of the big themes of this, and Tessa Thompson's character Bianca as Donnie's wife really does sort of emphasize this, that strong men do need to allow themselves to be vulnerable sometimes, emotionally available, and that they cannot heal from anything that they're sort of enduring unless that process happens. And that's true for Donnie as it is for Dame. I think he's done a really good job of showing that really, although that fight does end a certain thing, it doesn't end a healing process that both men need to go through, and forgiveness as well from themselves as well as each other. It's emotionally satisfying as well as visually, you know, stirring soundtrack. Great use of music again this as well. It really satisfies you on all levels, which I think is, again, an amazing achievement from Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, well, yeah, because considering this is the ninth installment in the overall franchise, I mean, to find kind of new layers, new wrinkles to explore within what is kind of quite a kind of fixed formula. I mean,
simple one, really. Guy who's an underdog wants to get in a ring, does so, and then what happens? You know, like, it is formulaic, but each one has managed to be very different and provide something. Apart from obviously that robot one with the robot, butler. You know, like they are all weirdly kind of unique despite being very much the same.
Yeah, because there are a number of parallels here with Rocky III, Stallone's own threequel, some which are obvious and some which I won't go into because they'll be spoilery. Mm. But yeah, it does follow in some ways a kind of similar arc to that. But does find lots of points of difference, and in the visuals as well, Michael B does find new ways to stage the fights, particularly in the final bout. I wasn't too sure about some of the flourishes towards the end, but you kind of got to appreciate the fact that he is trying to do something different that has been shown so many times before. He's trying to find some new angles, so I kind of appreciate it. I just wasn't sure if they quite worked for me, to be honest.
What, the whole like slow-mo and the sweat being popped off bodies when people are hit and whoa, kind of effects on their faces. That was me doing a wibbly face in an audio version.
It's very accurate. Yeah, and some of the more, there's some like more sort of expressionistic flourishes he goes into. Yeah, you've got to give him credit for trying something different, trying something new. And I'm sure a lot of people will kind of find those quite refreshing and bold. But I just wasn't sure it quite worked for me, to be honest.
Totally worked for me. And we saw it, didn't we, on IMAX. And
we did, yes.
You saw, great way you to see it. Every bead of sweat, every cut, every tooth that is dislodged in wide, wide screen. It's really immersive. You feel like you've been through the ringer yourself when you've watched it. Obviously, the other thing is, as a franchise, this needs to leave it open for further films.
Yeah.
What do we think, without giving anything away, do we think there is an avenue for this to continue?
Jordan has said himself that he's open to a Creed 4 and expanding the Creed universe. Numerous occasions before, you've kind of thought this franchise has reached its final destination. It can't go any further, and they've just found new ways to keep reinventing it. I mean, when the idea of Creed was first mooted, it sounded a bit iffy, you know, kind of sounded a bit desperate. And then it turned out to be this brilliant Oscar nominated film. You know, Ryan Coogler did such an amazing job with bringing back these characters, with kind of putting a new spin on Rocky and creating this new boxing hero. So yeah, you can never count out this franchise, so long as there are people who kind of take care of it.
See what you've done there. Yeah. Ryan Coogler is one of the writers on this one, which probably is why it's so successful. It has his fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, story credit,
yeah. And it does seem like there would be a generational story to tell off the back of this, which I'd be here for. I would be buying a ticket for.
Yeah, they do kind of, they kind of hint at that all the way through. There's hints of what the future might hold. But yes, I'm sure we'll see it continue. Because I mean, this has received really good reviews and there's a huge fan base out there for it. There's such love and affection for this whole series. So yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised to be still talking about these movies. It always reminds me of that gag in, I think it's Airplane 2, where you see like a really withered Rocky and there's like trillions of Roman numerals behind him. It's like Rocky umpteenth or whatever. So yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, with or without Stallone, this franchise is going to keep on punching.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so I think we can say we highly recommend a bit of Creed for your weekend, if you fancy that. It is out in cinemas on Friday. Right then, from one male friendship to another, it's this.
Est-ce que je peux poser une question? Est-ce que vous êtes ensemble?
Mais pourquoi tu dis ça?
Parce que ça nous tente trop.
Enfin, je sais pas.
Bah, on s'est rapprochés parce qu'on est
sûr et certain.
So this is Close. This was a big hit at Cannes, wasn't it, last summer? Yeah. Tell us about it, Matthew.
Yeah, so yeah, this won the Grand Prix and it's got an Oscar nomination for Best International Feature Film. I think it's got a fairly good chance of winning because it's had lots of acclaim, lots of attention over the past year, which seems to keep building. It's directed by Lucas Daunt, who made a film called Girl in 2018. And this time he's focusing on two boys living in Belgium, Leo and Remy. They're best friends and we see them at the start of the film. It's during the summer holidays and they're enjoying their friendship. They're very affectionate with each other, very, very tactile. But when they start back at school, they get teased for their closeness, some slurs aimed in their direction. And that causes one of the boys to start to distance himself from the other one. It kind of drives a slight wedge between them, the kind of the peer pressure and the mocking and the teasing. And then eventually there's an incident, which I won't go into. There's a turning point, which I think is best left unspoiled. And then the rest of the movie charts the fallout from that. And it gets very kind of serious, gets into some very deep issues, and not just to do with friendship, to do with mental health and coping with different things in life. So quite a tough viewing in some ways, although it is handled with quite a lot of sensitivity. Kind of there's lots of subtle hints of what has happened, lots of nuance. So you do sort of read between the lines, but the impact is still there at the same time.
Yeah, it's a very sort of evocative film. It does a lot of beautiful landscapes and whimsical sort of camera angles and things like that. Would you describe it as a stealth gut punch of a film, that you sort of start off with these boys running through fields together with absolute sort of joy, and then it takes you somewhere else?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Although it does kind of start in such an idyllic sort of fashion. You just know something's it's going to take a dark turn, you know.
No one can enjoy running through fields this much without something terrible coming.
No, I mean, it's like Adonis Creed with his perfect lifestyle. You just know something's around the corner. So, yeah. And when it does happen, it does kind of hit hard. And the rest of the film is kind of devoted to exploring what has happened between these two boys and really, really unpacking it. Doesn't kind of just deal with it and then move on. It does really kind of dig deep into it. And one of the boys' mothers, played by Emily Duquesne, she has quite a prominent role in this as well, about her kind of reaction, her feelings to what has happened and her relationship to these two boys. So she's very much the kind of the sort of third point of the triangle in this story.
But a helpful film maybe for people or younger people that might be sort of seeing themselves in this, or indeed parents of kids that might be going through this.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because there's quite universal themes going on to do with friendship and just how friendships can change, especially those very intense, close friendships you do have as a child, how they can either big things can happen that force children apart, or you can just drift, you know, without either person really willing it or wanting it. These things just happen. And just the kind of, and the peer pressures that surround children as well, the kind of sometimes the teasing that that gets inflicted upon them, or the way they just kind of grow and their interests change, they go in different directions. Yeah, it's very, very relatable themes.
Mm. Do you think it's a good companion piece to Banshees? That's a different way a friendship breaks up, but both sort of incredibly hurtful and alarming to the person who didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but I could see that. Although, there's no donkeys in this one and no crones.
No crones or donkeys. But nonetheless.
Yeah, no flights of fancy. It's very sort of naturalistically done, yeah. And,
so what do you think, what do we think the chances are then for the Oscar for the best international film? We've got All Quiet on the Western Front, which cleaned up at BAFTA. Argentina, 1985.
Yeah.
This one, The Quiet Girl and Io.
Yeah, I'd say it's between this and All Quiet on the Western Front. I mean, that seems to be gathering a huge amount of momentum,
doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
And I think Argentina 1985 has fallen by the wayside. Quiet Girl is a lovely, lovely film.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I don't know that the Academy will go for that one. And Io is just gorgeous. The donkey film with the little donkey just wandering around the countryside, but. Again, I think they might go for something more issues-based than that. Even though the EO one is about issues in terms of what we do to animals and how we treat them, I do think that maybe the issues in this will be something that voters might really resonate with. So we'll see, won't we? For now, we're saying that we would recommend seeing this one.
Yeah, I think don't go see it maybe if you're feeling a bit vulnerable. I'd say maybe, I think we should give a trigger warning because of some of the issues it does deal with. But yeah, certainly if you're in the mood for a very intense, kind of honest, raw drama, this is the one for you.
Okay, so Close is out in cinemas on Friday. So shall we go from one European country in Belgium to Sweden with this?
Vi hade hört talas om elöverkänslighet. Det hade vi gjort.
Så det är klart det kan drabba andra, men att vi skulle drabbas det.
The Ghost.
De här tygen, det är bomullstyg och sen är det små koppar, trådar i dem. De stötte från sig mycket vågstrålning.
Så har vi ett folielager i väggen.
Nej.
So this is Electric Malady. Who is suffering from an electric malady?
Yeah, well, this is a Swedish documentary, and it's centered on William, this young man who's a master's student. Seems to have his whole life ahead of him, lots of opportunities, seemed very excited about life and what it could hold. But he develops this malady called electrosensitivity, which entails him basically withdrawing from anything that involves electricity, radiation, Wi-Fi. He goes to live in this in a remote cabin, this foil-lined cabin, and he has these cages and blankets surrounding him. So he's very much isolating himself from anything, any sort of radiation that might affect him. And the film follows him dealing with this illness and shows his parents as well how they cope with this. And there's a priest as well and doctors. It's quite interesting because the malady at the center of the film is perhaps not totally recognized as a legitimate thing. I mean, he's obviously suffering. He's clearly in pain and in difficulty. But whether this is whether it's psychosomatic or it's a genuine thing, it's a bit unknowable. I think very much there is an emphasis on his suffering and how he copes with it, how the people around him cope with it. So it's quite an empathetic portrait of this this young man.
Yeah, I mean, it was nominated for the BAFTA documentary.
Documentary, yeah.
it's sort of Swedish, but it has sort of British involvement in it. The filmmakers go to great lengths not to judge him, don't they? They literally passively follow him and don't even really question it. Because he sort of walks around in a sort of lampshade covered in a blanket that's like this copper wire blanket. He looks like a ghost. His dad even says at Christmas, oh, here comes the ghost. There's comedic aspects of it when he's sort of trying to cook his dinner and he's saying, you know, sometimes my blankets catch on fire and things. So it sort of is a little bit Brian and Charles in that respect, but it's actually incredibly sad because he's so estranged from everything that he loves. He says he's a very social animal. He loves to be around people. His favourite holiday is Christmas, when he wants to be, you know, all with the family and doing all the Christmas stuff. And he physically can't because of the pain that he gets in his head whenever he goes near pylons or if anyone has a mobile phone or anything like that. He just can't do it. He, you know, he doesn't even have electricity to get him hot water. His dad has to bring him buckets of cold water from the pump outside. He can't even be outside in nature, even though he's so remote, just stepping outside because of the radiation that is from, you know, mobile phone masts even. It hurts him. But I did find it really sort of interesting picking my way through it and trying to decide what I thought was going on here, because he clearly is in such distress that he is discussing suicide. But at the same time, he thinks he's pinpointed a moment when this might have started, and his girlfriend suffered from it as well. But then you discover that the girlfriend has left this weird cocoon that they're living in, this Faraday cage, and now is married with children. So then you wonder, well, how has she progressed from this and he hasn't, and why hasn't he? So it is really sort of a bit of a detective story, as well as sort of just observing how somebody who literally can't go near anything electric. I mean, he can listen to music, can't he, on like a Walkman that he hides under a biscuit tin. But that's about it. It's a very sad life.
Very intriguing as well. Yeah, you kind of wonder how is this going to progress? I mean, how does something like this start? How many other people does it affect? I did find I kind of wanted a bit more wider context. I mean, I don't think the director, Marie Lydon, I think it was very much her intention to be a portrait of him and to focus on his suffering, to show this empathy with him. But I did find at times I wanted to see a sort of a bigger picture about how far and wide this malady does affect people and what the kind of scientific community thinks of it a bit more. She doesn't go in that direction.
We're not given any figures about how many people in the world are suffering from this, whether there are other people living under copper blankets and in sort of houses that don't have any electrics in them. We don't get any of that. The only doctor that we see is somebody who is fully engaged with it and thinks it is a thing. We don't see the flip side to that. So we don't see somebody who says, well, actually, I'm not entirely sure that this is physical. This could be emotional or mental. It could be, I mean, there is some discussion of him perhaps having a trauma that hasn't been realised. But apart from that, we don't get any sort of argument and we don't get any questions to him that are leading in any way whatsoever. So it is just purely observational. It made me want to just go away and investigate electrosensitivity more, really. Which
it's certainly awareness raiser. So from that point of view, I'd quite like to see a follow up to see how he's doing now, you know, see what progress he does make, how he's going to go through life. I mean, if things are going to change for him over the next, you know, five, 10 years, and for his family as well. But yeah, it does feel like it kind of scrapes the surface, really, in terms of what this affliction actually is.
Yeah. And also, I don't think it's something that I would, if I'm paying out my money this week, I'm not sure this is the one that's going to take my quids.
No, possibly not as a cinema experience. I don't think it would. I mean, like you say, it's pretty to look at. You know, there's lots of kind of outdoors footage is very nice. But I don't think it would lose a great deal on the small screen, to be honest.
Yeah,
there is a kind of a feel of a TV documentary to it.
Yeah, I feel like wait for the small screen version of this. Spend your money on something bigger. So that is Electric Malady, and that is in cinemas from Friday. What is your film of the week then, Matthew? Well, I mean, I think we can guess, but go ahead and say it.
It's got to be Donnie Creed in Creed 3.
Yeah, if you want, you know, bang for your buck, you're going to get it with Creed 3. That is a good use of your money. Okay, absolutely. So we should remind you that if you like this podcast, even though this one is quite slight, like Electric Malady. You can make your life easier by subscribing. Just press the button now and we'll go straight into your ears whenever we release it every week. Next week, we've got a bumper issue. We've got so much to talk about. But for now, we should probably go away with the thought that we have a new issue on sale, don't we, Matthew?
We do.
Granted by Nicolas Cage playing Dracula in Renfield.
Oh,
how exciting is that?
It's really exciting. I mean, I feel like I've waited my whole life to see Nicolas Cage play Dracula.
And Nicolas Cage tells us that he's waited his whole life to play Dracula. Yeah, he's doing the accent. He's got the teeth in, the whole shebang. Read all about it. It is on sale now. Plus, in there, there's Fast X, there's Shazam 2, there's Dungeons and Dragons, Infinity Pool, Chevalier, and I got to sit down with Zach Braff and Florence Pugh to talk about their new film, A Good Person, which they made during the pandemic and is coming out soon. So do get your copy. Rush there and get it. Get your hands on it. Right, that's all we've got time for in this very brief, small but beautiful episode. But before we go, we do have time for a listener's question. And this works very well with Renfield. What's cinema's greatest vamp?
Greatest vamp, that's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, so many to choose from, so many iconic ones. Christopher Lee, Bela Lugosi. But yeah, for me, because it was the first 18 rated movie I saw in the cinema.
Yeah.
Not the first 18 rated movie I saw, but at the cinema. I'm going to go for Gary Oldman in Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
Just for different looks he models.
So many different looks. And, you know, like never not knowingly eating the scenery, is he? I mean, so Thankfully. Over the top. You know, wearing his little tiny glasses and telling Winona he's travelled oceans of time.
Oceans of time.
Or whether he's just rolling in on casters into dinner with his wiggy hair that looks like a heart-shaped baboon's bottom. Who knows what that looks about? Yeah, it's really lavish and over the top. Good choice. Yeah, it is iconic. Well done, Gary. I'm going to go similarly. It's not necessarily the best, but it's the one that was very informative in my life growing up. We used to have sleepover parties and watch this every time for a good year. Lost Boys and Kiefer Sutherland's David. Rocking a trench coat and a peroxide mullet. Again, with him, it's the sort of thing that we were talking about with Jonathan Majors. I do think he plays an excellent baddie, but manages to put that humanity and vulnerability in it. There's a point where he's in great pain and he's furious and he's really malicious and menacing, and a single tear rolls down his chalk white face. And you can see that he is literally a boy that is trapped in this vampiric life. But also, can I have two? Because I do want to do a shout out to Tom Cruise in Interview with the Vampire. Lestat, and everybody, even Anne Rice, who wrote that book, said, this is terrible casting. What a disaster. He's going to be awful.
No.
And he was wearing a blonde wig and he was frilled up to the nines, prancing around like a blood-sucking narcissist. It was everything I wanted and more. And the sexual tension between him and Brad Pitt as Louis.
That's incredible.
And, you know, Kirsten Dunst as this little sort of doll-like vampire child fluttering around New Orleans, just eating people, some of them with more relish than others. I loved it.
Yeah, it's a terrific film, yeah.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you could also go for vamps as in not blood-sucking, but Lady Vamps, Louise Brooks. You know, I think she's one of cinema's greatest vamps. So
Thurman's played a few vamps.
Take your pick. But those are ours. Let us know if you have a greatest cinematic vamp on Twitter. But for now, Matthew, it's time to say goodbye. Do you want to do it in your best vampiric voice?
Farewell. Until next time.
I like it. Good. Goodbye.
Oh. Wah,
The sirens are screaming and the fires are howling. We're down in the valley tonight. There's a man in the shadows with a gun in his eye and a blade shining oh so bright. There's evil in the air and there's thunder in the sky and a killer's on the bloodshot streets. On down in the tunnel with a deadly horizon. Oh, I swear I saw a young boy down in the gutter. He was starting to foam in the heat. Oh, baby, you're the only thing in this whole world.
We're not together when it's over, you know. We'll both be so alone.